Assalamu alaikum. Good morning, everybody. I'm Azrat Al Saeed, working with a small organization called Roots for Equity in Pakistan. We will be discussing the dairy and livestock sector globally and in Pakistan today. I have with me my colleague, Ms. Ayman Babar, who has been researching the corporate grab in the livestock dairy sector in various countries. Here in Asia and I think one in Africa. And I would really like to know what she has been working on and what she has found out. So I have a set of questions for her, and this is going to be fairly informal. Let us start. Would you like to introduce yourself, Ayman?
Hello, my name is Ayman, and I've been working with Roots for Equity for 2 years. And I think the objective of this podcast is that when we started out looking at the dairy and livestock sector in Pakistan and how corporations were encroaching on it, we really didn't have a global perspective. And now that we have looked at what is happening in other countries, we're really able to see how the patterns of corporate grab are fairly similar across countries. And mostly it's the same set of, a handful of corporations that are behind this drive.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much. So maybe we can start with what are the top importing exporting countries in the dairy sector, in the dairy and livestock sector, and what are their corporations? Maybe you can talk a bit about what are their shifts and who are the benefactors of this kind of trade in this particular sector of dairy and livestock.
So for this, I would like to, refer to the data that is from the year 2020. And as far as importing countries go, if we look at the list of top importing countries, individual European countries still top the list of largest importers. But if we look at it from the perspective of, a continent-wise perspective, we see that Asian countries are now importing the highest worth of milk. And this is, of course, for 2020. And there, the purchases of Asian countries actually account for about 45% of the global total. And in this, China has emerged as the largest importer. And on its own, it accounts for 15.5% of global imports. And we also see that the fastest growing markets since 2016 are China, Nigeria, Indonesia, and Malaysia. So these are the importing countries, and the exporting countries we see are basically dominated by European countries and the United States. So the top five would be New Zealand, Germany, United States, Netherlands, and France. And these accounted for more than half of all exports. And US exports alone have been up by more than 60% since 2016. As far as the top dairy corporations are concerned, data from 2020 tells us that Nestlé is number one. Nestlé is a Swiss company. Nestlé is followed by Lactalis from France, then Dairy Farmers of America, then Danone from France, Yili from China, Fonterra from New Zealand, Friesland Campina from Netherlands, Mengniu from China, Arla Foods from Denmark, and Saputo from Canada. So out of these 10 corporations, 6 are found in Europe. There are 2 from China, 1 from the USA, and 1 from Canada. And this makes it very clear where the power lies, in what countries and what continents the actual power lies, and where the corporate control is concentrated.
Amazing. Yeah, that's really something very new for us in Pakistan, because for us, milk has always been a household good, and we have rarely thought of it as a tradable commodity, because we are used to having fresh milk, and the whole concept of exporting milk seems so strange to us.
Especially when we see that, you know, when we talk to people in our rural communities, they often say that, you know, before a few decades, two or three decades ago, selling milk even within the country or even outside the village was considered a taboo.
Wow.
People wouldn't do it.
Yep.
But now we see that the sector is really emerging as, you know, a hotspot for finance, and it's attracting all kinds of investments. And, you know, in 2019 alone, there were a total of 115 deals within the dairy and livestock sector, of which I think 25 were in Asia. So we see how much capital investments this sector is attracting, and therefore all the corporations, even those that were not traditionally within the food and agriculture sector, are now looking to increase their profits by investing in this sector.
So, Eamon, listening to you, I have two questions. So, number one is, when you say that the Europeans are exporting, you mean exporting milk only?
Yes, I do mean that. And even in milk, the highest exports are for powdered milk that they export to countries like Pakistan or Sri Lanka or, you know, many countries in Africa. And that's very, very cheap. And it's produced by European or American farmers at very subsidized rates.
Okay, great. So one thing then comes to mind is that it's not fresh milk which is coming from these countries, but it is largely powdered milk. Right.
Exactly. And, you know, to make the processing even cheaper, they most often combine it with, you know, vegetable oil or other, you know, not very healthy substances that would lead to cholesterol and other health problems. And they do this especially for what they call low-income countries and the low-income groups within those countries.
And so Pakistan would fall in one of those categories.
Yeah.
And from my understanding, in Pakistan, we are one of the top countries where milk is produced, actually.
That's true. I think it's the fifth number.
And even then, we have to import powdered milk from these countries. Is there a shortage of milk in Pakistan?
No, there isn't. I think we also see this globally, that with the move towards industrial farming and corporations and processing companies actually handling the supply of milk, they do not want to purchase fresh milk from farmers because, you know, our traditional system includes motorcycle vendors or bicycle vendors going deep into the villages and collecting milk from multiple households. But the corporations do not find it cost effective to do that. And so they deem our traditional supply chains as inefficient and ineffective. And, you know, in turn, what they do is that they actually import very cheap powdered milk.
So, Eamon, I do know that you have been researching how corporations in various countries act on the ground. So maybe this, what you've just told us about traditional milk chains in Pakistan, you could maybe give us some more methods and tactics that the dairy and livestock sector has been using in other countries. And do you see any similar patterns in the various countries that you have studied as yet?
So the countries I've mostly looked at are Turkey, Vietnam, Kenya, and Sri Lanka. And of course, I've looked at them in comparison to Pakistan. Now, the thing is that all dairy corporations label the fresh milk market as their biggest competitor, right? And so it makes sense that corporations have used a lot of baseless claims to offset the competition from small farmers and small dairy producers. And so far, even despite their best efforts, they have been unable to eliminate this competition because, one, people prefer fresh milk for its rich taste and nutritional value, and the majority of the people find it to be an affordable source of nutrition. Since in most countries, it retails at half the price of company packaged milk. Plus, fresh milk also lets consumers in small milk shops make yogurt, lassi, butter out of the fresh milk. What happens in packaged milk is that the cream has already been extracted and the fat content is significantly low. So these byproducts can't be made. Additionally, it also has added emulsifiers and stabilizers that do not allow this to happen, right? So then they've started using a range of other tactics to capture the dairy and livestock sector, right? And amongst those, what tops the list is, of course, that, and we see this across countries, that these corporations lead a consistent, sustained campaign against fresh milk. They call it adulterated, contaminated, they call it devoid of nutrition. And they do all of this to push for very stringent regulations, right? In Kenya, we see that the government's crackdown on the informal milk market was to actually establish monopolistic control of the Brookside Dairies because it is owned by the wealthiest family in Kenya, and they're also involved in the political sphere. We see that in Turkey, they banned the sale of fresh raw milk in 2008. And also mandated producers to conform to EU processing standards. Similarly, Pakistan also wants to implement a mandatory pasteurization law by 2022 in Punjab, in the province of Punjab. And what all of these countries have done is that they enlist the help of scientists and doctors to give credibility to their claims, about, you know, fresh milk being contaminated and bad for health. And that's how they mold the mindsets of consumers. Now, all of these campaigns are heavily sponsored and funded by the dairy corporations themselves. The second thing that they do is that they malign fresh milk in order to push for very stringent regulations in processing and packaging. But the thing is that it's not as if packaged milk is automatically safe. We look at a lot of sources, and in 2017, the Supreme Court of Pakistan actually ordered out that all brands of pasteurized and UHT milk should be tested. And 9 out of 10 brands of pasteurized milk were declared contaminated after the lab tests. And all of these standards that are pushed by corporations are always barriers. They're either technical barriers or economic barriers or a combination of both. An example of this would be that across countries, small farmers are unable to coexist with dairy processors because our traditional supply system includes vendors on motorcycles and bikes that pay the small dairy producers daily, while company chillers pay them after several months. Now, of course, this is not feasible because farmers rely on the income from milk for their daily expenses. And so this practice is actually designed to ostracize small producers and only allow companies to work with big dairy farms. It's also said that local breeds have low productivity and therefore the dairy sector's potential is being wasted. This is one of the biggest bases for corporate capture of the livestock sector. And the thing is that most countries do produce enough to satisfy local needs. And in any case, pushing for the imports of foreign animals is not actually feasible for small and landless farmers. We recently had a community consultation in which farmers told us that for local cattle, 15 to 20 kilos of fodder is consumed, and after that, the animal can yield up to 15 kgs of milk. Whereas for the foreign cattle, they consume about 100 to 120 kg of fodder. So it's not even profitable if they produce 40 kg of milk. Small farmers cannot afford to give foreign cattle the kind of diet, the kind of industrial animal feed that they require. And, you know, if you look at costs and profits, it's not even feasible. But what has happened is that in a lot of countries, there has been a consistent drive to replace the local cattle with foreign cattle, right? In Turkey, we see that the domestic Simmental breed that can withstand severe weather conditions and produce milk with higher fat and protein has been replaced by imports of Holstein Friesian cattle to a very large degree. In Sri Lanka, we see that imports of foreign breeds became the cause for farmer suicides because farmers had mortgaged their assets to buy these animals, and then when they could not thrive in the weather conditions, the farmers basically did not have any property left, and so they committed suicide out of desperation. Another tactic that corporations have employed to eliminate the fresh milk market is actually that they say that because of the distance from cities to villages, it is actually very difficult to supply fresh milk to cities. In Pakistan, the Bara system came to the rescue when corporations came up with this ploy. And what the Bara system is basically a small cattle farm that used to exist within the city's boundaries, and it had about 20 to 25 cows and would supply fresh milk to the cities from within the cities, right? And so the fresh milk markets still thrived on the basis of these Baras, but corporations have systematically eliminated this, and the Baras have been forced to relocate to cities outskirts, but they still thrive. So, you know, this ploy is also rendered basically redundant. Corporations are also always involved in lobbying to negotiate free trade agreements that remove key protections from the dairy sector and drive down the rates paid to farmers by importing powdered milk. In most countries that are flooded with imported powdered milk from subsidized EU countries or America, we see that the farmers are campaigning for an increase in import duties to be protected from this practice, whereas the corporations are constantly lobbying for the import duties to be decreased or eliminated altogether. Corporations are also notorious for creating an artificial demand for their products, and they do this by adding a health and wellness component to their advertising in order to capture consumers' attention more. And I came across a study by Grain that actually talked about how Nestle's brand Nido increased its market share in Pakistan, right? So initially when Nido was launched for children, it wasn't able to capture the consumer's attention, but Nido carried out research and they found out that iron deficiency in urban children was actually very high. And so in their next round of advertising, they said that their milk is infused, it actually targets children that do have an iron deficiency and improves their health. And so what happened was that in the next year, their sales shot up drastically. So basically, we see these practices, these methods of encroachment, I would call them, across countries, right? Corporations are very well aware of the power of the fresh milk market and of the power of the farmers behind this market, and so now they're resorting to any means to shape consumers' mindsets and actually capture a market that is traditionally in the hands of small and landless farmers and small dairy producers.
So actually, that's a very different area also, because they are now, especially the another group of corporations, also from the agrochemical arena, are selling micronutrients like that. So when you say iron, I wonder if iron was added as a micronutrient to Nestle. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this is something which I think is worth exploring through other work that we need to carry out. I remember you telling me something about the television-sponsored advertisements. Hmm. Can you talk a bit about it?
So, I would like to talk about it in the case of Pakistan and a provincial food authority, along with, multiple doctors and health professionals and scientists regularly show up in these television advertisements saying that the milk produced by small farmers is adulterated, contaminated, and incredibly harmful for the health of consumers. And basically, that is how they promote company processed milk and processes like mandatory pasteurization.
So yeah, I am aware of that in Pakistan, but you see that in other countries as well.
Yes, and in other countries, there's probably more proof of these campaigns being led by corporations themselves. But in Pakistan, we haven't been able to find proof of that yet.
I see. This is really quite, the word shameful comes to mind. And of course, we know very well that corporations have a long history of very unethical campaigns in the agriculture sector, in the pharmaceutical sector, everywhere. I mean, that is the reason that corporate grab has become the word, which basically points to the unethical, almost illegal practices that these corporations are able to carry out because of the might of their power, the assets that they hold, and the jobs that they can provide. So I'm very happy that we have been able to look at some of these areas in Pakistan and elsewhere. Would you also like to just tell us a bit about the impact of these encroachments that these corporations are having or carrying out in different countries?
I think the two impacts we look at the most is one, the impact it has on farmers, and the other, the impact it has on our environment and ecosystems. And those two obviously are also closely connected. Because in rural settings and, in the practices of small farmers, raising animals or rearing livestock is not considered an extra activity, right? So it's not separate from agriculture, and it is very well integrated within the agriculture ecosystem. So the practices themselves are not harmful for the environment if we compare them to the cattle farming systems. In this, I was looking at Vietnam's dairy sector, and in that, one of the biggest corporations, TH Company, established a cattle farm so huge that, the waste management from that could not be conducted efficiently, and it actually caused the displacement of multiple villages because of that reason. And, if you see our traditional farming practices, that won't be the case because the waste management is so, so efficient. The women really take care of, how they collect the dung and how they preserve it and use it for other things, as fuel or, to fertilize their land. So I think those are the few differences that we need to look at. So we see that the meat and dairy corporations are one of the biggest contributors to greenhouse gas emissions. And they're even fast on their way to leaving behind oil and gas corporations. We are fed this falsehood that, these industrial farms can coexist with small farmers, whereas that is definitely not the case. Because there is a huge destruction of farmers' livelihoods that comes with the setting up of these cattle farms. Because one, small farmers cannot adapt to the standards that are set for commercial processing companies. And, along with farmers' livelihoods, the milk collectors also lose their livelihoods, right? And if we look at the percentage of the sector that is handled by small farmers in third world and first world countries, that becomes very apparent. So in most third world countries, 80% of the dairy sector and livestock sector is still in the hands of small farmers. But we see that in first world countries where you know, industrial scale farms are the norm, only about 10% of the sector is in the hands of small farmers. So then another thing that we see is that the domestic breeds of cattle, of livestock, are being lost. And this is, of course, a huge disadvantage to farmers who are the traditional custodians and, you know, who conserve livestock species. But also it's harmful because these breeds have adapted to the climate. They're hardy and resilient. These local breeds can subsist on the local varieties of fodder, whereas the cattle that is imported needs industrial animal feed that in very, very large quantities. And that is definitely not sustainable for our context.
Thank you, Eamon. That was really useful. And I think there are many more questions that are arising from what you have told us. And of course, this is the very initial levels of research that is being carried out right now. And one of our reasons for doing this podcast is hoping that this will also be a stimulus for people from other countries to raise this issue in fighting for justice, fighting for the livelihood of small and landless farmers. And I would just like to add that in my country, in Pakistan, the livestock sector is really in the hands of women. It is the women, the landless women farmers, who look after the cattle, look after from goats to cows to buffaloes, and they treat them like their own children. So for us, you know, in our own communities, in our culture, there are not huge boundaries in the living species that live off the land. Whether it is humans or it is animals or plants, we tend to live in harmony with each other. And the industrial agriculture, the capitalist agriculture has really, really torn apart the very fragment of society in our countries. And I think it is a big credit to Eamon that she has really put some effort into looking at other countries. Of course, our own country, we have done quite a bit of work already, but we were interested in seeing what is happening elsewhere. And I hope that more and more information will start coming around the sector, and we will be able to mount a very big campaign, a global campaign, against corporations who are encroaching onto the very basic foods of peoples like those in Pakistan and elsewhere in the world. Thank you very much.